move on to the next property, which is Anderson Stadium, Austin, Travis County.
Okay, Anderson Stadium in Austin. This nomination was prepared by Rebecca DeBrasco with assistance from THC staff for the original LC Anderson High School Alumni Association. Anderson Stadium, also known as Yellow Jacket Stadium, is a football and track and field facility constructed in 1953 as part of the larger LC Anderson High School property, the segregated all-Black public school. This is where it is located within the city on the east side, east of I-35. And here's an aerial view with the boundary marked in yellow, showing the boundary of the nominated parcel. Anderson Stadium is a mix of original buildings and landscape features, restored landscape features from the 1990s reclamation of the field, and a new building intended to continue use of the site. The stadium sits in a lower topographical level from the school site in a natural bowl and includes a mix of built and landscape features. Contributing resources include a grass field within the depression of the stadium, with concrete infrastructure to maintain that bowl, and the field house, a CMU block building built in 1960. This two-story concrete block field house with equipment storage on the first floor and locker and shower rooms on the second. A small concrete ticket stand, two sets of concrete stairs leading from the school site down into the stadium, and a one-story concrete block concession stand. The stadium, and here's the retaining wall and the infrastructure, which was also built in 1953. The stadium suffered from neglect and disinvestment as the ISD failed to maintain any of the buildings or structures. At one point in its history, the stadium was paved for a parking lot, and many of the original features of the field were removed, including the original lights, goalposts, scoreboard, bleachers, track, the grass field, and a concrete restroom building. The stadium sat in this condition until the surrounding community, led by former NFL player Thomas Hollywood Henderson, funded the restoration of the field and track. The current metal bleachers, goalposts, scoreboard, and one-story concrete block restroom and concession stand date to this restoration in the 1990s. Currently, the AISD is constructing a new field house and bathrooms adjacent to the 2019 restroom building. You can see the arrow is pointing to this in the northwest portion of the property. The school itself has been mostly demolished, and ISD is building a new school campus in this location. Opened in 1953, Anderson Stadium stands as the last of only a few exclusively African-American high school football stadiums ever constructed in Texas. Unlike any extant property in Texas, the stadium reflects the history of African-American high school football, track and field, and marching band in a segregated school system. It continues to serve as a place of community gatherings and stands as a place of high esteem in Austin. In addition, Anderson Stadium tells a story of discrimination and systemic racism faced by the Black community in struggling to obtain, quote, separate but equal facilities. Anderson Stadium never received the funding lavished upon its whites-only counterpart, Austin's House Park Stadium, shown here, and therefore was built with cheaper materials such as wooden bleachers compared to the substantial concrete grandstands at House Park. The photos here, historic photos taken in 1939, soon after the House Park bleachers were built, and in 1952, the War Memorial scoreboard is shown in this 1952 photograph. And here are more photos of the current House Park Stadium, which is still operable. It's still in use and is used for AISD games, high school graduation ceremonies, and so forth. And these photos were taken in 2021. The inequality of segregated school facilities was a direct factor in Anderson's loss of integrity after integration of schools diminished the utility of the school and its stadium, whose wooden structures could easily be removed. Instead of investing in Anderson after integration, the school district opted to build a larger and costlier second stadium for use district-wide, this being Nelson Field, built circa 1963, an indication that the ISD recognized the inherent inequality of the Anderson facilities. The district discontinued use of the stadium in 1971 as part of its ongoing school integration plan. While some of the stadium's built components, most notably the playing track and field, have been rebuilt, the overall historic look and feeling of the facility are intact, with its unmistakable bowl-like setting, which allowed for a large number of attendees far beyond the capacity of its bleachers. At one point, there was a game played here that drew 6,000 fans, which is far beyond the capacity of the bleachers that existed at that time. Despite the removal of the original bleachers, the stadium continues to convey its prestige within the African-American community, for which the quality of construction was secondary to the stadium's role as a venue for student achievement. Anderson Stadium is nominated as a significant cultural landscape at state level, meeting criterion A in the areas of ethnic heritage, African-American, and entertainment recreation as an African-American high school football, track and field, and marching band stadium, and as a key community property in Austin and the state of Texas. We have a letter from the AISD, Matias Seguro, who's the chief of operations, with an endorsement and full support of this nomination. We also have a letter from Albert Walker, past president of the original L.C. Anderson Alumni Association, Austin chapter. I believe we received at least one more letter. I don't have it in front of me, but there's been tremendous outpouring of support for this nomination. I'll ask her to unmute.
Yes, Rebecca, we have two speakers or two people who would like to make public comment. I'd like to call on Rebecca DeBosco first.
Thank you, everyone. I am Rebecca DeBosco. I'm a historian that is the author of this nomination. I have worked for over 5 years with the original L.C. Anderson Alumni Association and trying to document the history of the 1953 school as well as this stadium. And I really appreciate you taking the time to review and vote on this stadium. I know as historians, we don't like to say something was the first or the only or the rarest, but this is a really unique property in the state of Texas. And of course, in Austin, it is now the only historic place associated with the original L.C. Anderson High School left in Austin. All the rest of the original buildings and places have now been demolished. And it is one of only a very few, as we saw with the Fort Worth Stadium, very few high school stadiums constructed solely for use of the African American high school, and it is the only one that really still retains its historic appearance in Texas, as far as I've been able to tell. So it's a really special property. It's really important to Austin. It's really important to the alumni. It is amazing that it still even exists. And I am just so excited that we're here trying to get it in the National Register of Historic Places. So thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Rebecca, for writing a wonderful nomination. Okay, next we have Leal Anderson.
Hello, everyone. Good morning. It's good to see everyone on here. I hope everyone's doing well. And I want to, first of all, just tell the board, thank you all for taking the time this morning to review this application, all the applications, but, you know, more specifically this one for Anderson Stadium. I would like to just, first of all, just share some of what's in the letter. I am the athletic director for Austin ISD, oversee the high schools and middle schools for the district. And as a representative of Austin ISD, we're writing in support of the nomination of Anderson Stadium to the National Register for Historic Places. The district values the historical significance of the Anderson Stadium, and we strongly encourage the Texas Historical Commission to support this nomination to the National Register of Historic Places. The story of African-American history is undertold in Texas, and places like Anderson Stadium need to be recognized and preserved at the state and national levels. Anderson Stadium, also known as Yellow Jacket Stadium, is located in Austin, Texas, Travis County, and has a special and significant historic place that tells the story of African-Americans in organized sports. The stadium was associated with the original L.C. Anderson High School, Austin's only African-American high school, which was closed due to segregation in 1971. In August of this year, the original school site was thoughtfully rebuilt and expanded to serve East Austin community. Preserving many of the elements of the original building was a priority to the alumni in the district. A Texas historic marker was dedicated at the high school site for its significance in the integration of Austin's public schools. Austin ISD also recognizes the importance of the Anderson Stadium, has recently designated to serve as a district-wide central facility. In doing so, more students and community members may experience being on this historic field. We do believe that the historic Anderson Stadium deserves a place in the National Register of Historic Places, and doing so would bring additional attention to the importance of this East Austin site. And so, again, a lot of history here. We're very passionate about it in Austin, and we'd love to see kids back playing on this field. And, you know, that's what this is for. This is for the kids. It's for our community. And so we just want to thank you guys everyone for the time and your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. At this time, we have Barbara Spears Corbett, who would also like to speak. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. Hopefully everyone can hear me. I just like to start off with that I'm representing the National Original L.C. Anderson Alumni Association, and we want to start by saying thank you for reviewing and your consideration of this application for the Anderson Stadium. It has a rich history, as things that have been shared and possibly some of the letters that you have read that have been written in support. Just not to repeat, you saw the presentation, which was fantastic, and what the athletic director, Mr. Anderson, and Rebecca, who has been a great support in helping in writing this application. I just want to share that the role the stadium played in the East Austin community. I'm a graduate of Anderson. I grew up here in East Austin and spent time there at that stadium. I was also a part of the marching band. So therefore, I marched on that stadium. I was the drum major. I finished in 1970. And as it was said, the school closed in 1971. One of the things that I do want to share that's currently happening is that the original field house that was pictured in the presentation is being restored. And what we hope that we can set this up as a museum gallery so people can enter that original field house, see what a field house looked like back in the day, and also have a pictorial history of all the events and activities that took place at that stadium, as well as just for the whole history of Anderson and their athletic program. Anderson, this served as the home, the stadium, I just want to just also iterate, it served as the home for state champions, the Yellow Jacket football team, the marching band, and also we held a national record for the Yellow Jacket track team. So we are truly excited, and hopefully that we really ask for your support. And again, we hope that we can make this a focal point again in the community for the community to come out and visit, as well as to see young students playing on that athletic field again. Thank you so much, and thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Spears Corbett. At this time, I would like to open the floor for board discussion, and I'd like to start off by saying just a thank you to Rebecca. I had the opportunity or the honor to chair a panel at the previous Vernacular Architecture Forum where she presented a paper on this work, so wonderful job. And it's fantastic to hear of the plans for the restoration of the field house. And as a teacher, studier of, is that a word, studier? a student of historic interiors, and a lot of my professional work encompasses that, I'm excited to hear about the plans for the interiors of the field house. So well done. Is there any other comment or discussion from the board?
We need a motion first, Tara.
Oh, sorry. I'm That's getting right. ahead of myself. I got excited.
Well,
this time, I would like to call for a motion. And it's a reiteration that this property is being considered for recommendation or being recommended for listing to the National Register under Criterion A in the areas of entertainment, recreation, and social history. And under Criterion, or I'm sorry, I'm looking at the previous nomination, aren't I? Yes, I am. And switch screens here. And so we are recommending this property, Anderson Stadium, under A in the areas of entertainment, recreation, and ethnic heritage, African American at the state level. Could I have a motion from the board?
This is Steve Klein. I move that we recommend this property for listing under Criterion A, ethnic heritage, African American, for entertainment, recreation, and sport at the local level of significance.
I'll second.
Oh. Go ahead, Dr. Roberts.
Andrea, you seconded?
Oh. Yes, okay, I'll second it.
If I may interject, it's being nominated at the state level.
Did I say local? But I said state.
Okay, sorry, the state level of significance. So if amend that to the state. Do you want me to read the whole thing again or?
I got it.
Okay, thank you for the correction.
Okay, the motion has been moved and seconded. And now is there any board discussion?
I wanted to make a comment about this nomination, but I really wanted to illuminate not that the nomination was well written concerning the property, but more about what the property means. And it really gave voice to the way this property was situated in so many ways in the lives of African Americans. So rather than just being about external validation, it was really about all of the community organizations and the role of the property, and most importantly, the role of systemic racism and why integrity was an issue at all in this property. And I think it's more and more important that we have our professionals who write these nominations fully contextualize these properties. And I think this is really a model for how to do that. And I just want to commend Rebecca and the way she worked with the community to make this nomination possible.
I just agree. I just want to add, I think there's so much to really like about this nomination, really love about this nomination. I love the contrast between this and House Park, especially because House Park is still extant, it's still being used. And so having this one preserved in the city of Austin as well. I mean, it's, and I'm also, you know, I love the idea. There's so many fantastic pictures included in the nomination. And I know with the strong support and, you know, interest from the alumni, I'm sure that there's a lot more where that came from. And so I love the idea of having those available to the public in the restored field house. It's an excellent nomination. And yeah, a really interesting property. Oh, and the other thing, just that not only did it close down, but then was brought back and restored by the community in the 90s, which I know isn't historic at this point, but I like that that was included and made clear in the nomination.
Thank you, Hannah.
This is Nesta. I'm going to jump in as well and kind of piggyback off Andrea and Hannah. One of the things that struck me the most is, Rebecca, how you were very skillful in pointing out the importance of this landscape. I mean, it was literally erased and brought back. You know, it's that land and that community tie that's so important. And I think it, often in underrepresented groups, that's been historians and archaeologists have used that as an excuse in the past to argue against something being eligible. And it's wonderful to see us flip that around and say, no, that's not how it is. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Nesta, Andrea, and Hannah are completely right as far as representing properties and getting their historic significance recognized, whether we're talking about local, state, national levels. It's really imperative that we start being able to understand that context and having documents like this that that hone in on that allow us to do our job so that we can address these issues in the standards and other things that are currently in place that don't necessarily allow for this kind of listing. So again, well done.
Go ahead, I'm sorry. I also wanted to add to that and just thank the author for adding context and framing, you know, the systemic racism and the types of materials being used and how that has impacted the, you know, long-term sustainability or, you know, integrity as it stands within this nomination. So I was very happy to see that. I think, you know, with so many of our Black and Brown sites, this is a common theme. And for many individuals doing this type of work, we understand the context and why it is here, but I do appreciate that this was framed within the nomination itself and thought that it was a very well done and made a case for it. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Would any other board members like to speak?
This is Ben Cash. I had a slight small technical question. I've seen it listed under Black or African-American, and I just want to know what the correct term is to write on our form.
The bulletin says Black. I tend to use African-American. The Park Service doesn't really care which one we use.
Thanks for clarifying that, Greg. This time I'd like to call for a vote, and I would like to reiterate that the motion is for listing at the state level of significance. So at this time, all those in favor? All those opposed? The motion carries with no opposition. Thank you.
Thank you all for your kind words about the nomination. I spent a lot of time on it, and I'd also really like to thank Greg. We've had a lot of discussions about how to handle all of this, so I really appreciate his support and helping frame this too. So thank you all again. I really appreciate it.
Wonderful. Thank you, Rebecca. At this time, we will move on to the nomination for Houston Tillotson College, Austin, Travis County.
Okay. Kara Bertrand with the City of Austin prepared the nomination. This was through a grant funded by the National Trust. Houston Tillotson University and the Travis County Certified Local Government both communicated their enthusiastic support for the nomination in letters to the Texas Historical Commission. Houston Tillotson College is Austin's oldest institution of higher learning. Established by church-affiliated organizations during Reconstruction, Tillotson Institute, founded in 1875, and Sam Houston College, founded in 1877, were part of a sweeping national effort to educate formerly enslaved people. In the late 19th and early 20th centuries, the institutions instructed young men and women in industrial training, science, and liberal arts. Through the 20th century, Houston Tillotson's collegiate curriculum diversified and modernized following national trends in higher education. Fostering personal, social, and civic relationships has also been a paramount objective for administrators and educators. Its graduates became teachers, ministers, politicians, musicians. They played professional sports, were medical professionals, attorneys, business people, and civic leaders. In 1952, Samuel Houston and Tillotson Colleges merged in the wake of integration to operate cooperatively instead of competitively. Under a new administration and board of trustees, Houston Tillotson implemented an ambitious campaign to increase flagging enrollment. They hired prestigious Austin firm Cooney Brooks and Barr to design a campus plan with modern facilities to replace its aging physical plant. Between 1952 and 1974, Houston Tillotson added nine substantial buildings with a central quad. These were funded primarily through the United Negro College Funds Mobilization Program, but also with funding from the FHA and US Office of Education grants. The result was a coherent collection of modernism's transition from clean-lined, low-slung post-war buildings to new formalist ornament and brutalism's concrete sculptural forms. In the 1950s, Cooney Brooks and Barr had established reputations and were responsible for fine institutional and commercial buildings throughout the city. After Cooney's retirement, associate architects David Graber and J. Roy White became partners. The firm's prestige increased through the 1970s. As the consulting firm for the University of Texas and numerous federal contracts, including the LBJ Presidential Library, they were a particularly modern and significant partner for Houston Tillotson. Houston Tillotson College, which is now Houston Tillotson University, is centrally located off of East 7th Street, less than 1 mile from the Capitol Building in Austin. The nominated boundary encompasses the entire 19.8-acre campus. Out of the 21 total resources, 14 contribute to the institution's historical and architectural significance. The three oldest campus buildings were built between 1911 and 1936 when it was Tillotson College. Nine contributing buildings and the contributing quad followed the merger of Tillotson and Samuel Houston Colleges. The district not only reflects popular architectural 20th century styles, but also reflect the era's evolving theories and practices in higher education. So I'm gonna take you on a little tour. So this is the view of the quad looking north and south. The entire campus sits atop a hill that overlooks downtown. Evans Industrial Hall and the Administration Building were previously listed in the National Register, and these are the oldest buildings on campus. Connor Washington Building was built as a home economics classrooms. It is the only building from the 1930s. The Mary Branch Gymnasium was technically predated the plan, but was part of the Board of Trustees' vision for the campus. Dickey Lawless Science Building. The women's and men's residence halls were both built in 1956 with 1965 additions. These were built with FHA with insured FHA loans. The Downs Jones Library, the nomination does not list its architect, but it was Cooney Brooks and Barr. It was recognized by Texas Architect with an Architecture of Merit for the past 10 years award in 1960. It is missing its concrete screen. The student union was by Associate Architect J. Roy Wright with Brooks and Barr. We have the administration building. The Jackson Moody Humanities Building and King Seabrook Chapel are contributing buildings that are less than 50 years old. Both were built and completed in 1974. They received an honor award from the Austin chapter of Texas AIA, but these buildings were part of the 1954 campus plan. The Quad is considered a contributing site. And non-contributing resources on the campus include some guard stations, some temporary structures, and the Sandra Joy Anderson Community Health and Wellness Center, which was built in 2015. Houston Tillotson College is nominated to the National Register of Historic Places at the state level of significance under Criterion A in the area of education and ethnic heritage, African American, and under Criterion C in the area of architecture. Compared to other Texas HBCUs, Houston Tillotson is a remarkably intact university campus with a high concentration of contributing buildings that demonstrate the institution's 20th century historical and architectural development. Established for the education of African Americans, the university was also an environment that nurtured its students and faculty's cultural, political, and social lives. Houston Tillotson alumni, faculty, and presidents are a who's who with local, state, and national influence. As a built landscape, the campus is also a cohesive collection of buildings that reflects distinct periods of architectural styles and approaches to the design of educational facilities that chronicles the school's growth from the early to the late 20th century. Although three resources were completed in 1974, these buildings were part of the institution's ambitious 1954 campus development plan that followed the institution's merger. Their completion marks a logical end date to a discrete period of significance, 1911 to 1974, defined by the campus' earliest and oldest resources. Thus, it is not necessary to prove the exceptional importance under criteria consideration G. Finally, the nominated district meets criterion consideration A for religious properties because it derives its primary significance from its historical and architectural, historical associations and architectural distinction. Thank you.
Thank you, Bonnie. This time, is there any commentary from the public? I would like to welcome Dr. Colette Pierce-Burnett from Tillotson University to speak. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to take an opportunity to thank the commission for recommending our listing and to say that I'm available. I'm currently the sixth president of Houston Tillotson University and very proud to serve the institution in that way. We are really an anchor institution in East Austin, and we're proud to be the oldest institution of higher learning. And we continue with that same mission today. We have a beautiful campus, and to be even recommended for this listing is truly an honor for the institution. So thank you very much for your time and your consideration.
Thank you for the honor of your presence this morning. At this time, I would like to ask the board for a motion.
I'll recommend that this nomination be listed under criterion A, under education, ethnic heritage, Black, criterion C, architecture, meeting criteria consideration, A and G, at the state level of significance, which the documentation fully justifies.
This is Saylan, I second.
Okay. Motion has been moved and seconded. I'd like to open the floor for board discussion at this time. I'll just say that I think this is fantastic. In any research that I have done architecturally, historically, otherwise, that relates to Austin, and in many cases, Texas's African-American history, all roads lead back to HT in some way, shape, or form, whether I'm studying students of the university, their programs, their effect on the community, and I've worked on buildings on the campus in various really shape and form, particularly the East Austin survey. So it's wonderful to see that the campus is finally being recommended for listing to the National Register. If there's no other board discussion, I would like to call for the vote. Again, to reiterate, the property is being recommended for listing to the National Register under criteria A and C at the state level of significance. All those in favor? All those opposed? The motion carries with no opposition. Thank you. At this time, I'm going to flip-flop the very last two items on the agenda as we have two public speakers, commenters in person. So we will move forward with the Stephen F. Austin Elementary School nomination for Wharton, Wharton County.
This nomination is for the Stephen F. Austin Elementary School in Wharton, Wharton County. The school is a modernistic colonial revival style Depression era school building. It is a modernistic colonial revival style Depression era school building featuring the symmetry of both classical and colonial styles, with an expression of monumentality. Also known as the Able Street School and Minnie Mae Hopper Elementary, the facility is approximately 20,000 square feet and is centered on a 4.48 acre property nestled in a residential neighborhood across from the Wharton Cemetery. So if you don't know where Wharton is, it is southwest of Houston, as you can see on this map. And then here is a site plan showing the parcel and the school on it. The single story building has an E plan, including north and south courtyards. The formal primary building entrance features an entablature with a broken scroll pediment that reflects the colonial revival style. The main building includes principals and nurses offices, 14 classrooms, boys and girls restrooms, an auditorium with stage, and cafeteria multipurpose room. Two additional single story, single classroom with buildings were constructed on site in the 1990s. These flank the historic school property. Although altered over time, changes to the school have been additive, not reductive, to the original design, with a majority of the alterations occurring within a period of significance to further the original intended educational use. I'm going to take you on a quick tour through the property. You see the south and west elevations on the top slide, the north and west elevation of the original north wing, south and east elevations of the original south wing, north and east elevations at the south courtyard. As an E-plan building, it has lots of elevations and lots of corners, makes it somewhat complicated. Here's the 1955 cafeteria addition. And as you enter the main entrance, you walk past this inscribed panel, indicating that it was built through the Federal Emergency Administration of Public Works. And it identifies the architects and the superintendent's name as well. The interior is very intact, and this is well documented within the nomination, with original doors, hardware, transoms. Here are just some of the shots from the nomination, including a view of the entry hall looking north towards the classroom corridor and a typical classroom interior. The school was constructed in three major phases in 1930, 1935, and 1939, utilizing federal funds for public buildings. In 1930, brick salvaged from the 1899 Wharton Public School was used in the original four-room school. This was to save money at the very beginning of the Great Depression. The 1935 addition represents the majority of the school construction and was designed by Giesecke and Harris of Austin. The firm was known for designing schools statewide. The addition established the current modernistic colonial revival style by incorporating sloped roofs, massing, and window fenestration patterns with a 1930 stucco ward school into an overall composition utilizing both traditional and modern design elements. 1939 additions designed by Hedrick and Lindsay with Wharton architect Albert Reber matched the 1935 design. These additions were funded as part of the second round of PWA matching grants. The school's significant under criterion A in the area of education at the local level as a property that represents local changes in race and ethnic relations through early efforts to promote integration of Hispanic students in Texas. The school was utilized strategically by local Mexican-American community leaders who were well-connected with activist leaders in Texas to promote statewide school integration efforts. These efforts received national attention in the 1952 article titled "Texas Tackles the Race Problem," published in the Saturday Evening Post. The school is also significant at the state level as one of the nine original sites for the 1958 LULAC-funded preschool program, Little School of the 400. The program was developed to teach 400 basic English words to Spanish-dominant children in order to help them effectively succeed in the public educational system. The Little School of the 400, planned, financed, and implemented by Mexican-Americans, represents the first successful educational programming for non-English speaking Latin American students in Texas. The program was so successful, it was incorporated by the state of Texas in drafting and passage of Texas House Bill 51, creating the quote, this is the name of the bill, the preschool instructional program for non-English speaking children in Texas. Stephen F. Austin Elementary is one of the last two remaining schools of the original nine little schools that maintain a high degree of physical integrity. The school is also significant under criterion C in the area of architecture at the local level as a good example of modernistic colonial revival style and a fine example of numerous South Texas public schools designed by August Harris and Bertram Giesecke. The school features symmetry of both classical and colonial styles. The building served as a public elementary school through 2009. Subsequently, the Wharton ISD housed the alternative school program, special ed administration, and Head Start preschool programs in the building. The property is proposed for redevelopment for housing, retaining the school building. The project is subject to Section 106 review and meetings between the THC, Wharton ISD, the General Land Office, the developer, the County Historical Commission, and other interested parties are ongoing. Thank you. We do have two members of the public who wish to speak in regarding this school. They are logged in. They are also sitting in front of me in our public space. So we welcome them.
Thank you, Greg. And at this time, I would like to welcome the first of our two guests, Mr. David Bolin, to speak.
Yes.
There's the mic.
You are unmuted. And you can start the video now.
Very good. Thank you very much, Greg. Really appreciate your support during the nomination application process. I'm David Bolin. I am president and owner of A2J and also president of Broadus Construction and co-owner of Broadus Construction. Broadus Companies has three projects underway in construction that involve the Texas Historic Commission, including the Dallas County Records Building on Dealey Plaza.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Slate Plantation, Missouri County.
Just a second. Yes, Hannah?
I'm sorry. We're getting a lot of echo, I think. Is there somebody else in the room who isn't muted? If everyone else in the room could mute, and then we can hear Mr. Mullen better. No, not you, Mr. Yeah, if he can be on, and then if everybody else can mute, I think we'll get less feedback here.
Okay, for those of us who aren't there. I will mute. We will all mute our computers for Mr. Bowen. Thanks.
Thank you.
Audio check.
Sorry to interrupt.
Audio check, 1, 2, 3. Is that better? Audio check, 1, 2, 3. Okay. Thank you, Gregory. Again, it's good to be here in person, and thank you for your support during the application process. As you know, we have submitted an application concurrently with the Wharton County Heritage Partnership, and it's wonderful that so many people in historic groups are committed to protecting this historic building. My name is David Bolin. I am the president of A2J Holdings, the applicant and developer for the project as it goes forward. I'm also president of Broadus Construction, and the Broadus Companies has 3 active projects underway with the Texas Historic Commission, one being the Dallas County Records Building on Dealey Plaza, taking a full block of buildings and redeveloping those to meet the standards of the National Register. We also have the historic Levi Jordan Slave Plantation in Missouri County that's underway. It's almost completed, and that's a design build delivery. And then we also are the program manager for the historic Alamo renovation in San Antonio. So we understand and respect the THC and their involvement, and are looking forward to this project in Wharton. Joining me is Laura Clemens here to my right. Laura served as the original author of the grant application for the Wharton Independent School District, and she is a specialist in federal policy compliance and has a history and legacy of historic projects. So we're in full support of designation of the school for the nomination. We have just a couple of minor suggestions on modifications to the application. Notice on page 2 that it does indicate that the category of property is buildings, plural. It's accurate that there is one historic contributing building, and there are 2 non-contributing buildings, and there's a 3rd building that's not occupiable. It serves as a physical plant for a chiller and boiler. So technically there are 3 non-contributing buildings, 2 of which are classrooms. Throughout the application, there are 3 or 4 references where it refers to the site, and we are simply suggesting that historical significance be replaced with building, because it's nominated as a historic building and not a historic site. That's one edit. There are a couple others further down on page 14 that have some verbiage related to the probability of Native American burials. And we would suggest, instead of probability, the word be changed to possibility, because one of the requirements of the programmatic agreement will be for us to go and do imaging and perhaps mechanical scraping to verify with a certified archaeologist to verify if there was any presence or remains of Indian burials or other burials on the property. So if we could simply consider changing that word from probability, because it's unproven, to possibility. In that same paragraph, at the section 8, page 28, it references again the school site, playground, and sports field. Again, that's getting into the site, and it is a nomination for a historic building and not the 4.48-acre site. It's for the building. So that's it. Those are the recommendations we have. We're very excited about this project and are very anxious to begin the studies that will lead to a project that is designed and constructed in accordance with the standards of the Department of Interior. And we're very excited about the project. So. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Laura Clemens. I am the one that put together the original grant application when it was submitted under the Wharton Independent School District for GLO funding under the Affordable Housing Program. What I wanted to say is most exciting about working with Mr. Bolin with his extensive experience with historic properties is that not only is this an opportunity to leverage disaster recovery money to restore a really important historic contributing asset to a neighborhood that is well centralized in the middle of the neighborhood, an older neighborhood, a great place for families to be, It is adjacent to a trail system. It's just all around wonderful. But with Mr. Boland leading the project, what he is conceptualizing for the interior in order to restore really spectacular elements of it is to create a project that not only serves the community, but also creates an opportunity to highlight the importance on a national level of an award, a nationally award-winning project on not only historic preservation, but an adaptive reuse to do something that so many communities are struggling with across the nation, which is providing affordable housing to the citizens, especially in communities impacted by disasters. So I'm really excited for both the state and the city to get to highlight what will inevitably be something that receives national media attention for the product that will inevitably be delivered.
Thank you, Ms. Clemens. Mr. Boland, for your comments. Are there any other comments from the public? These are no additional comments. I would like to reiterate to the board that this project is being recommended for listing to the National Register under Criterion A in the area of education and under Criterion C in the area of architecture at the local level of significance and state levels of significance. Thank you. That screen wasn't in front of me, or it's minimized. And so at this time, I would like to call for a motion.
This is Ben Cash. I'll make a motion. I move that we approve or recommend this property for listing under Category A, education at the local and state level, and under Category C, architecture at the local level, which the documentation fully justifies.
And this is Steve Klein, and I second it.
The motion has been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion from the board? I don't think we have,
I'm having mouse problems. Hi, this is Selah, and I just wanted to say that I very much appreciated reading the nomination and commend the author for the work through this nomination. I did have a question about, there is reference to the founding and the origins of Little School 400 in the nomination, where it speaks a lot about LULAC president and Dr. Hector P. at a Corpus Christi. And I wondered what I don't know if the author is here today, but if there was any thought given to also referencing Council 60, LULAC Council 60, for its role.
I don't know if there's anybody here to address that, but it's something that we can discuss. Here, I'm going to start my video per Judy's recommendation. Hello. So yeah, that's something that we can discuss. If you want to send me your comments and recommendations, we can see how we can incorporate that into the nomination.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Greg, I couldn't hear Selah very well. So what was can you just reiterate the council, what it was she wanted to include? I want to make sure I get it right.
Yes, Selah, can you turn on your microphone so you can answer that? Specifically, what were you recommending be addressed in the nomination?
So I was asking if there was any consideration given to including LULAC Council 60.
Okay.
You're saying Council 60, 6-0.
Council 6, yes. 6-0.
Thank you.
Zero.
Thank you.
Thank you, Selah. Thanks, Greg. Is there any other board discussion? If there is no additional discussion, I would like to call for the vote. on this property under the criterion aforementioned? All in favor? All opposed? Okay, the motion carries with no opposition. Thank you. Now we will move on to our final property of this morning's meeting, the Pan American Courts and Cafe in Laredo, Webb County.
This is Alyssa, Pan American Courts and Cafe, Laredo, Webb County. This nomination was prepared by Jesus Nahar on behalf of the property owner. Pan American Courts and Cafe is a post-war motor court located at 3301 San Bernardo Avenue, the historic Pan American Highway in Laredo. The property consists of three buildings and a steel canopy in a vaguely U-shaped configuration enclosing a central courtyard. The 1946 Main Motel building's plan features a combination of a two-story L-shaped portion and a one-story wing. The building originally contained 21 units and was constructed of concrete block and reinforced concrete, featuring a flat roof, cantilevered canopy, and streamlined horizontal emphasis. In the late 1950s, two freestanding lodging units were constructed of concrete block and reinforced concrete on the landscape yard on the south side of the property. 1946 Pan American Courts metal neon roadside sign is extant at the front of the property. A non-contributing steel canopy was added to the southwest corner of the property in 2003. Designed by prominent local architect Pablo Sands, the property is a rare remaining example of modern architecture in Laredo. The property has had few alterations since its construction and retains much of its original form, plan, and design, and most of the rooms continue to serve as overnight lodging for travelers on I-35. Overall, the property retains a high level of historic integrity. Pan American Courts and Cafe is a representative example of a historic motor court that proliferated along the historic Meridian and Pan American highways after World War II. Motor courts came into vogue in Laredo in the 1930s as the latest development in tourist accommodations en route to and from Mexico. Pan American Courts and Cafe is nominated to the National Register of Historic Places under Criterion A in the area of commerce. At the local level of significance for its association with the development of both the Meridian and Pan American highways and its relationship to the growth of the tourism economy in South Texas in the second half of the 20th century. The property is also nominated to the National Register of Historic Places under Criterion C in the area of architecture at the local level of significance as a rare and exceptionally intact example of a 1940s motor court property type with a full-service restaurant in a border city. Distinguishing characteristics are the intact post-war site plan, circulation pattern, and size and scale of intact historic concrete block buildings and iconic signage. Designed by Pablo Sayens, the first Hispanic member of the Texas Society of Architects, the modern architecture is distinctive for its brick-shaped concrete blocks, coarse and horizontal bands, and interior building finishes with imported Mexican cement tile flooring. While Laredo boasted several motor courts in the early 1930s through the 1970s, the Pan American Courts and Cafe is one of two extant examples. The period of significance begins in 1946 with the construction of the Main Motel building and ends in 1972, the year that the Lincoln Juarez Bridge opened to international traffic, which made I-35 the city's main thoroughfare for travel and prompted the decline of San Bernardo Avenue as the prime motel corridor. During this time, the property served largely in the same function, which justifies extending the period of significance to 1972 without claiming criteria consideration G for exceptional significance. Thank you.
Unmute. Is there any public comment for the Pan American Courts and Cafe? If we have no one wanting to speak from the public, I'd like to reiterate that the property is being recommended for listing under Criterion A in the area of commerce, under Criterion C in the area of architecture at the local level of significance.
Hello. I'm available to speak. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Thank you. We would like to welcome you. Please go ahead.
Okay. My name is Sandra Rocha Taylor, speaking in support of the Pan American Courts and Cafe. Thank you for the consideration of our property. I just wanted to share with you that the Pan American Courts is not only a historic property for all that was mentioned, but it has a tremendous historical value for our family. My father watched the property being built in 1946 from his home across the street. He quickly applied for a job and was hired as a cook's helper at the age of 14. He continued to work there and moved up the ladder to eventually become manager of the motel. My mother was hired a few years after my father as a waitress. This is where they met and fell in love. They married and had four daughters, Mary Joyce and Edina Antonia, Catherine Linda, and me, Sandra. We grew up living in the motel as our parents managed and worked on the property. The third property owner sold to my parents. We never had a separate home and we lived on the motel. It was a very interesting life. Our parents passed several years ago and we were able to keep the motel and restaurant. Our family is still operating and managing the motel and grounds. We now have a beer garden with live music, a food truck park, and two art galleries within the courtyard and parking area. We are very connected to the property, its history, and its support of the community. In this world where it is so tempting to tear down older properties for new builds, we understand the significance and value of historic properties. We understand that as our historic buildings disappear, so does the personality of our cities, towns, and communities. We hope to be an example of historic preservation for our community. We recently had a request for a zone change for another historic 1940s motel to build a bus station. The Planning and Zoning Commission and staff were not in support of the change and it was denied. The council referenced our application to the National Registry and we are reaching out to the property owner to see how we could work with him to preserve part or all of the buildings. This year is our 75th anniversary of the motel. And as we celebrate this, we also celebrate Hispanic Heritage Month by honoring the building's architect, Pablo Sainz, the first Hispanic registered architect in Texas. Thank you again for your consideration. We look forward to changing minds and hearts regarding historical preservation.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor, for your comments. You're absolutely correct. This is a wonderful property to finish today's meeting and commemorate this month. I think we have comments from Dr. Roberts.
It is a wonderful nomination.
Can we get a motion first? Sorry.
Okay.
This is Steve Klein. I move that we recommend this property for listing under A, Commerce, and C, Architecture at the local level of significance, which the documentation justifies.
This is Anna Martinez-Katz. I second this one.
Thank you. The motion has been moved and seconded. Sorry about that, Hannah. I jumped the gun again. Okay, Dr. Roberts.
I had a question as to why it's local instead of state significance, considering, you know, the historical significance of the architect is state level.
We would be happy to consider that, raising it to state level of significance if you feel that the documentation supports that.
It appears to me that the documentation would support state level, and I would encourage that change.
This is Sayla. I also support that.
So we can get an amendment.
The motion.
And I just, we would need to amend the motion and then a second on that. But I guess one thing I want to clarify, so would we do both at state or commerce, local, and then architecture because of the significance? I had a similar thought. So for architecture at state, since it's being nominated on both, just want to make sure.
I think that makes sense if everyone agrees. To do commerce, local, architecture, state.
I would agree with that.
Okay. Steve, do you want to amend your motion?
Sure. So I move that we recommend this property for listing under A, commerce at the local level, and C, architecture at the state level of significance, which the documentation justifies.
And then Anna, do you want to second that amendment?
Sure, I'll second that.
Thank you. The motion has been moved and seconded, and the amended motion. There's no other discussion. I'll call for the vote. All those in favor? All those opposed? And the amended motion carries with no opposition. Thank you. That completes our agenda and review of nominations for this meeting of the State Board of Review. There are no other comments from the board staff. Again, I would like to thank outgoing board members for their service. And I think that we're right on time because the tailgating is starting to get going out here. I don't know if y'all can hear the music from the library. So this is Tara Dudley adjourning this meeting of the State Board of Review at 12:14 p.m.
Hey Tara, you need a motion to adjourn.
Oh, oops. Backtracks. Okay. But I have a motion to adjourn the meeting.
I will move that we adjourn the meeting at 12:15 p.m.
And a second.
I'll second that.
All right.
Who is that, Nesta?
The motion has been moved and...
Okay, thank you.
Okay, yes, Nesta. The motion has been moved and seconded to adjourn this meeting of the State Board at 12:15 p.m.
And then we need to vote. All in favor?
Here we go. All those in favor. All those opposed.
Thank you.
The motion carries. It's still 12:15 and this meeting is adjourned.
Okay. Thank you so much for your participation as board members, especially to the outgoing board members. We will really miss you and your insight. Please fill out your forms completely. We really review all of your comments, everything you send us. We take into consideration and try to address, well, we do address all of these things within the nominations before they go to the Park Service. So that's really important. And we really appreciate that level of service that you can provide. Our next meeting is scheduled for January 15th. And we've got nominations already in the hopper for that one. It's gonna be pretty exciting again. We don't know if it will be in person or online or hybrid, so we will keep in touch regarding that. I guess that's it. Judy just sent me a message about the new members. They have been approved by the commission. And so it's Brian and Gracia at West Texas A&M. In Canyon, Brentley Hightower, architect from San Antonio, Jeffrey Lieber, professor at Texas State University in San Marcos, Paula Lupkin, professor at North Texas State in Denton, and Kenna Archer at Angelo State University in San Angelo. So we've got a good team coming in. Thanks to the board for your recommendations for new board members. We always appreciate that. Thank you.
Hey, Judy, can you send me your home address so that I can mail the hard copies?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah.